Welcome to the Center for Spiritual Living Bellingham podcast. We hope this message will be informative, inspirational, and helpful. Donations to support this work are greatly appreciated. Visit www.cslbellingham.org and click on the donate button. Remember to share our podcast. Thank you.
So I'm Michael Tatlock. I'm the practitioner of the day. And there's a whole spiel that I forgot to do last week, so I came back to do it this week. So here we go. So not a fashion statement, remember? Not a fashion statement. It's a hint, because we practitioners are available for prayer. So if you see one of these come up and you ask us if we would do a prayer for you, and we would be more than happy to. Also, we're so 21st century here. There's a little jar in the back on that table. Well, maybe it's like 16th, 17th century, I don't know. Anyway, and you can get a writing instrument known as a pen. You can, and there's a piece of paper there, and you can write down what your prayer is, put it in that little jar, put the lid on it, and then we'll give you a prayer. Or, now here's where we get really 21st century. You can go online. Ooh. I know, right? It's amazing. So you can go online, and you can fill out a prayer request there, and you'll get a prayer. So many ways to reach us. So why don't you just settle back, take a nice deep breath, and know with me that right here, right now, there's just one power, one presence, one beingness that surrounds us, that flows through us. And is at our center, the divinity that we are. And from here, we just rise in joyous anticipation for what we are about to receive today. And in this joy, there's so many possibilities. Gesundheit. And out of these possibilities come so many choices that we get to make, and we each individually are empowered to make that choice. So knowing that as all the elements of today come together to raise us up, as we hear the talk from Dr. A and the music from Tabor and the band and the love that is present in this space, I just declare this to be exceedingly good and gracious and joyful and happy. And I just say, and so it is.
This month we're exploring the possibilities and the challenges in living beautifully in the world. And so I decided to use a quote from Plutarch. And it goes like this. It's really kind of a condensation of a larger piece he wrote. The mind is not a vessel to be filled, but a fire to be kindled. And so I want to start actually by weaving something that I was talking about last week in, for those of you who weren't here, because I got a lot of calls and visits this week because of the talk last week. And what I was talking about was, I was talking about how you always hear this expression, well, when one door closes, another door opens. And I said, but no one tells us about the hallway between the two doors, and that the hallway is very dimly lit with obstacles that are hard to see, and it curves so that you can't see the door you're going to right away. And so apparently a lot of us are in the hallway. Some of us multiple hallways all at the same time. And so I wanted to talk about a facet that I didn't get to last week, because I only have 20 minutes, that has to do with today's talk. So how do we actually get out of the hallway? Because what happens to a lot of us, including me for a while, I was talking about an experience in my life where it was very difficult, very, very difficult, worst thing I've ever been through probably. And I probably stayed in the hallway a little bit longer than I could have, because I had never been in that hallway and I couldn't see very well. and I kept bumping into things. So why that happens, in case any of you are taking a while in that hallway of yours, is we have this thing called the amygdala. And remember, I was a therapist, so I'm going to throw words at you and then explain them. So it's that part of our brain that we share with the animals, other animals. That is the fight, flight, or freeze part of our brain. And it's still there, you may have noticed. But over the millennia, what's happened is that stopped being the only go-to for action or inaction. And we started building different facets of our brain that gave us the ability to reason and have emotional intelligence and could give us discernment about whether something was dangerous or not, in different ways. So it's been wonderful to be born in this time with a neocortex. It's so good, because we're a lot happier because we're not constantly being jerked around by fight, flight, or freeze. Except when one door closes. And then for a lot of us, we go right into that response. And I'll tell you, the primary response of that part of our brain is fear, right? No surprise here, is fear. It's just like the go-to emotion when we're confronted with the unknown. And we become fearful to the point of sometimes immobile. So a lot of times we're walking in that hallway, heading toward the new door that will open, but we're walking in fear. We're walking with courage, perhaps, but we're walking in fear. And I don't know if you relate to this, but certainly that was true for me. And so one of the things that helps is what I'm going to talk about today. It's not even hard to access as long as we remember, but here's the thing about fear. Fear has a tendency to wipe out all of the knowledge that we have that would assist us in moving forward with grace and ease. It tends to sort of blockade everything and say, this is the worst thing that's ever happened, and it'll never be okay again, and why did this happen, and oh my God. So, you know, relating? Okay. And so in that state of mind, which we'll kindly call the victim state, it's hard to access this other part of us. And yet, there is another part of us that in these situations can come forward and actually assist us in bringing light to the hallway and bringing light to the door we're heading toward and actually illuminate obstacles and assist us in so many ways. So imagine right now you want to know what that is. So what it is this thing that I just read you, this quote about the mind isn't a vessel to receive information. It's a fire waiting to be kindled. We're not a passive container at all. That's not who we are. Which sometimes makes me concerned about the internet. Because the internet is an easy place to just sort of sit and fill ourselves with information. Have you noticed that? I mean, nobody here binge watches YouTubes, I'm sure. But, you know, it's this sort of passive sitting there and being filled. And there's a part of us that needs more than that. Because we're not built to do that, really. We're built to be on fire with our life, to be kindled in creativity and excitement and ideation and awe and wonder. That's what we're built for. That's what we've come to in our evolution. And it's not just, you know, I imagine there are some of you going, well, you know, you're sort of Miss Positivity over there on that stage, but that's not really why I'm saying this. We actually have evolved into a place where now we understand that we actually, I mean, this is in every grocery store, bookstore, anywhere you want to look. We've evolved to the point where we know that there is a linkage between our neocortex, our brain and its function, and the reality that we experience. We know that now. It's not a woo-woo thing anymore. It's neuroscience on every level. And so when we're in the hallway, we have the opportunity to activate the neuronet in our favor by actually working with what's right about the situation. You know, because the fear goes, this is so wrong. This shouldn't be happening. I don't know if your fear says that. Mine does. Every time, all the time. And so to circumvent it, one of the tricks that I've learned in being a therapist and doing this work for so long is to actually ask a different question. Instead of saying, what's wrong? What's right about this for me? And it takes us down this other line of inquiry that's really powerful. It doesn't in any way mean that hard things aren't happening. It's more like, all right, but what's the frame? How can I frame this so that I can actually move forward with authority, knowing that there is something for me here? So it's kind of the difference between, for me, it's kind of the difference between organic intelligence and artificial intelligence, which we're meeting and using all the time now, right? So artificial intelligence has what are called hallucinations. Have you heard that? Okay, well, people are now advertising AI that's hallucinating free. And what they mean by that is that AI tends to sort of want to please us. And so it will grab information that's not even true, that's misleading, because it wants to give us an answer, because we asked, which would be lovely, except that it's misleading and often wrong. And so those are called hallucinations in the AI world. So organic intelligence, on the other hand, is the deeply embedded knowing that you and I have, that allows us to encounter reality with vision, with a gut-level intuition, with a sense of opening to idea. And it's hallucination-free. In fact, it's so standard factory operating equipment that when we begin to use it more and more, it's kind of like a muscle, the more we use it, the more available it becomes in situations like the hallway. Because we can then know for certain that there is something in us that knows a deeper knowing than the fear-based thinking that might be happening. And learning how to access that, learning how to be with that, learning to trust that, because that's a big problem sometimes. It's like, well, how do I know if I can really trust this? You don't. You never will. You just have to move forward. And time after time, the more we utilize our organic intelligence, the more we realize, oh, this actually has validity. I can trust it much more. So how to come into organic intelligence is kind of what the science of mind teaches. Our philosophy is really interested in taking a look at what's called metacognition now, meaning that we understand that we are moving with and through and in something much vaster, an intelligence, if you will, or a vast energy that is not only holding us all like a river that would hold us as we float down it, but we're actually immersed in it. It's flowing through us and as us. And it's actually got an intention, which is to offer itself all the time and all that it carries, all that it is, this vast energetic field, all the possibilities that it is, to actually offer that and continually offer that to us. But when we're in that fight, flight, or freeze state, we're blocked from accessing that. We can't find it. We're focused on, this is so wrong, this isn't supposed to happen, or whatever. And so opening to that takes some knowledge. So here's what I've learned. I've learned that in order to access that inner organic intelligence, I need two things. I need to open my mind to the possibilities that might exist in any situation, instead of locking down on one or another, but rather being very wide open. And at the same time, I need to hold myself with elevated emotion. And what I mean by that is not elevated fear or elevated anger or elevated despair or any of those, but rather the higher vibrational emotional states that you and I walk in and out of on a routine basis. So help me name some of them. What's an elevated emotion for you?
Joy.
Gratitude. Love. Peace. Exactly. Right? And the reason I call these elevated is because when we're in those states, we actually feel lifted. We actually feel as though we are on a different level of our own expression. And those actually can be accessed because they're flowing all the time in this river of intelligence. We can access elevated emotion by simply calling it forward. Like, let's try it. So for a minute, think of something that you absolutely love. It can be a donut, it can be a mammal, it can be a place, but just close your eyes if you're comfortable. Think of something you love. And just notice what happens in your body. That's organic intelligence. You just called it forward out of nothing. Whatever you're thinking of is probably not here, right? So you can open your eyes. So we can actually access elevated emotion and marry it, bring it into alignment with a deeply held idea of possibilities. And we can actually be specific about possibilities if we want to. We can actually think about how we want the door opening, how we want to walk through that door, and how we want to feel, and what we want it to look like in a general sense. We can actually focus on that, hold that, see it happening in our mind, and it typically begins to come to pass. Again, this is no longer woo-woo stuff. This is like every athletic training program in the world for the Olympics has their athletes doing this work, seeing themselves running and crossing the finish line first and feeling the joy and the exhilaration and the exhaustion of that. Every single athletic program for the Olympics. And of course, not everybody crosses the finish line first, but it's astonishing when you start looking at statistics for athletes, how we've broken record after record after record in recent times. Is it because we somehow have a greater fitness? Or is it that? Is it that they're working with elevated emotion and mind? Specifically, the part of our organic intelligence that can hold something as real even when it isn't here yet. See, that's what the amygdala can't do. It's too primitive. It can't do that. And so this other part of us that's developed can hold a reality for us until we literally walk into it. It's very powerful. So there's a story I brought from Joe Dispenza, a very famous person, by the way. This is from his book, Breaking the Habit of Being Yourself. And I love the story. There's stories like this all over. In fact, you probably have one. But here's just a fun story because I happen to like Italy a lot. Anybody else? Yeah, everything about it. So this is a story of Joe Dispenza's daughter. So he said, my children, now young adults, have used this process that I've described, exactly what I've described. And as a result of practicing these techniques, they've manifested some remarkable adventures. Since their childhood, we've had an agreement that they work on creating material things or events that they want to experience. However, the rule is that I won't interfere. They have to create intended realities of their own using their mind and interacting with the quantum field. My 20-something daughter studies art in college. It was springtime, and I asked what she wanted to manifest during an upcoming summer break. Well, she had a laundry list. Instead of the typical college student home for the summer job, she wanted to work in Italy, learn and experience new things, visit at least 6 Italian cities, and spend 1 week in Florence, since she had friends there. She wanted to work for the first 6 weeks of the summer, making a decent wage, then spend the rest of the break at home. So this is a very specific idea, right? A reality that she's like laying out for her dad. I commended my daughter for her clear vision of what she wanted. This is using organic intelligence, clear vision. And reminded her that universal intelligence would orchestrate the way her dream summer would manifest. She would take care of the what, meaning she would say what, the greater consciousness would handle how. Since my daughter is practicing the art of thinking and feeling ahead of an actual experience, I merely reminded her, and this is the most important part of this story, I merely reminded her to not only set an intention every day with regard to what that summer would look like, what people she would see, what events would transpire, what places she would visit, but also to feel what it would be like to experience these things. I asked her to create the vision in her mind until it was so clear and real that the thought she was thinking became the experience. And her brain's synapses began to wire that information as if it was a reality, which is now what we know happens. If she was still being, quote unquote, the young woman in the dorm room with a dream of going to Italy, then she would still be the same person living the same reality. So while it was still March, she had to begin, quote unquote, being that young woman who'd been in Italy for half the summer. No problem, she said. She had experiences like this before. I reminded my daughter, you can't get up from your mental creation of this experience as the same person you were when you sat down. You have to get up from your seat as if you just had the most amazing summer of your life, making it so real, right? The story goes on, and I'm debating whether to tell you or not. Would you like to hear the rest of it? Okay, because it's important too. After every mental creation, she was to go about her day living in the elevated mood of gratitude generated from having had the most amazing summer of her life. My daughter called a few weeks later. Dad, the university is offering an art history summer course in Italy. I can get the cost of the program and all expenses down from $7,000 to $4,000. Can you help pay for that? Well, it's not that I'm an unsupportive parent, but this didn't strike me as what her original intent was. She was trying to force and control the outcome of this possible destiny instead of allowing the quantum field to orchestrate the events in a way that was right for her. I advised her to really inhabit the Italian trip and to think, feel, speak, and dream in Italian until she got lost in that experience. A few weeks later, she called again. And her excitement was palpable. She had been in the library chatting with her art history teacher, and they eventually slipped into speaking Italian. Both spoke the language fluently. At that point, her teacher said, I just remembered. One of my colleagues needs someone to teach level one Italian to some American students who will be studying in Italy this summer. Of course, my daughter was hired. Get this, not only would she be paid to teach, all expenses covered, but she would be in 6 different cities in Italy for 6 weeks, the last week in Florence, and would be able to be home for the second half of the summer. Right? Well, as amazing as that is, and it is amazing, we can do that. I mean, I don't necessarily want to do that, but definitely, especially when we're in the hallway and fear is talking to us saying, this is the worst thing that's ever happened. Life will never be good again. How could this have happened to me? What did I do wrong? Blah, 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 blah. Is the moment to take charge. There are some moments to surrender. That's not one of them. That is not the one. That's the moment to get very, very clear as possible with how you want life to be, how I want my life to be, how I want it to feel, what I want it to look like, how I want to be in it, and on from there, a specific and clear a vision from my own organic intelligence as I can make it, and marrying that vision with how I want to feel in that reality, to the point where I am feeling that, I am being that. The synapses in my brain have completed their organization so that that reality is real to me at a deep level. And like the athletes of the Olympics, things start changing. The hallway gets a lot brighter. And the curve in it is simply the curve needed to encounter a new reality that I can open to. I know this sounds kind of simplistic, and in one way it really is, until you try it. Has anyone tried this? It's not that easy. I mean, it is, and it's not. And I'll tell you the number one thing that I've found for me, I don't know about you, that gets in the way of having this clarity of organic intelligence speaking through me, living in me, and that is habit energy. It's not investing the time on a daily basis to really do this work and hold it in such a way that it becomes absolutely real in me. And that doesn't make me a bad person, doesn't make anybody a bad person, but it is something to notice. That our habits are so strong sometimes that we become enmeshed in them, forgetting the importance of what we're seeking to actually be and create in our world, which is probably why we don't have peace on earth, is what I think, is that we're kind of preoccupied and distracted a lot. And so the work of our own life gets backburnered, much less the work that we could be doing in the world. The other thing I want to do is speak to any of you who might be, I don't know how to say this nicely. I'll say it this way. There's an archetype. You know what those are. You know, they're like the vast energy fields that contain a certain way of being that flow in and through us. And we have choices about that too, but one of the things that most of us have at one time or another is the cynic, the cynical side, the part that goes, oh yeah, right, sure, that's going to work. Tell me about it, you know. You probably don't do that. But in case it comes up, because archetypes have a way of showing up, especially when we're in a creative, powerful, embodying organic intelligence state. I want to remind you of what Ralph Waldo Emerson said, because for me, this has helped me immensely in allowing myself to own my visions, to own the dreams that come to me, to live in a state of awe and wonder and creativity and energized imagination. This one thing. I love Emerson. So there's other things he said that are just as powerful, but this one thing has held me. Because what the cynic will say is, how do you know what's right for you? How do you know? You're just airy-fairy dreaming here, or something along that line. So this is what Emerson says. Everyone has their own vocation. The talent is the call. There is one direction in which all space is open to them. They have faculties silently inviting them thither to endless exertion. They are like a ship in a river. They run against obstructions on every single side but one. On that side, all obstruction is taken away, and they sweep serenely over God's steps into an infinite sea. I get God bumps every time I read that. Sweep effortlessly into the infinite sea over God's steps. Wow. So what that does for me and how it connects to this talk is that often when we are beginning to really embrace our power and our ability to actually create a reality and walk into it, there can be pieces of us that say, we're not worthy of that. Why should we have that when everybody else doesn't? And other words like that. And I put it to you, I believe wholeheartedly, that each of us came to this planet and incarnated in this lifetime because we have something to offer that's unique and ours. And part of dreaming and wonder and creativity and active imagination and creating reality will always carry what you've come here to do. It always will. You're drawn to it. It's the open channel to the infinite sea and your own depths. So you can trust what the organic intelligence is saying and inviting you into. You can trust it. And I speak from personal experience. I know it's hard, especially if we're just beginning to learn how to do this. But oh my goodness, you can trust it. Your gifts are meant to be offered into this world, no matter what they are. Who knows what your gift, no matter how small or big, will do to change for the good the rest of us. So I encourage an awakening for all of us, and I commit to getting up every morning and doing this work without letting the coffee distract me too much. I'll make the coffee, I'll smell the coffee, but I'll do the work. Because it's important to live the life that we came to live. It's important to invoke and invite the gifts that we've come to offer and to live strong and clear, free from fear, with an elevated sense of love. So I'll do a prayer for that. How about that? And if you want this prayer, all you have to do is in your own mind say whatever she's saying, yes. Okay? There is one incredible, absolute, vast energy field. It flows and moves like a river through all humanity, through all life. It is flowing and moving and offering all that it is, the vast potential that it is, to me and to you. It never ceases offering. It never ceases flowing. And so remembering that I am in this incredible flow of divine intelligence and powerful love, I allow myself to open to the highest and most beautiful idea for my life right now. I allow myself to sit in meditation, to settle into the peace and the love that surrounds me and flows in me, and open my heart and mind so that that high vision can reveal itself. And once I see it and know it and feel it, I trust it and allow myself to move with it in prayer, in meditation, in vision, and in fact. I allow my mind to act as if it is real. And I marry that truth, that true reality, with the most wonderful feelings, emotions that I am experiencing in that reality, to the point where it becomes absolutely real to me. And as I do this, I am clearly stating how I want my life to be. I accept it as so. And as I accept it, it is done unto me as I have believed. And I'm so grateful to be remembering this, to be owning it, and to be doing the work to make that reality real in my life. I'm grateful for the infinite source of all potential flowing through me, in me, and as me now. And so I release this prayer to do its incredible work through me, opening the doorways and the channels of thought and mind and emotion so that I may live freely in this world at the highest level I can imagine. And so it is.